It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about predator species, and they've made a tremendous comeback around the nation with mountain lions and wolves. In Iowa, species populations are growing as well with bobcats and coyotes, and we've actually seen a wolf in the state. We've seen mountain lions or cougars in the state as well, animals that we really haven't expected to see within the state's borders. Now, when people in Iowa come into contact with wildlife and they have questions or conflicts, one of the people they turn to is Rebecca Christoffel. She is Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Specialist, and she is with me now. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. It's great to be here.
And John Shivick and I were talking about how much more often people are coming into contact with wild creatures. And of course, that is changing in Iowa as well as our communities expand, and also habitat loss as people are planting more and more acres of corn and beans. We are finding that with the habitat reduction because of these changes, animals are adapting, and we are interacting with them a lot more than we used to, aren't we?
We sure are. We build communities that are inviting to these animals, and where they used to have other places on the landscape, those fence rows and that, along farm fields and that have been being lost, being taken out so we can have a few more rows of corn or beans, they're making their way more and more into our human communities.
And coyotes have been a big part of the population in Iowa for a very long time. As we were talking about, they're very adaptive creatures, and they have found ways to live in places where you never could have expected that they would live. And we have a very strong population of coyotes here in the state, right?
Oh, we certainly do. And our bobcat population is increasing. In fact, a lot of populations are increasing of the smaller fur bearers, things like raccoons and that used to be harvested quite a bit for their pelts for the fur trade. You know, it no longer is fashionable for women to be wearing real fur, but it used to be. And so there were a lot more of these animals harvested, and that has gone way down. Plus, we no longer have the larger predators that, again, you know, when John was talking about the interconnectedness of all of these animals within the community and plants, I might add, you know, again, if one of the elements is taken away, it has some cascading effects or trophic effects on other levels.
Now, I mentioned that there was a wolf sighted in Buchanan County. It was actually shot in Buchanan County in February and killed. But that was the first wolf seen and documented in the state of Iowa since 1925. Do you think that there's a possibility that with wolves increasing in, say, Wisconsin and Minnesota, that we will see more wolves in the state?
I don't see any reason why not, particularly because wolves, when they have to disperse, right? So you get, you know, a certain number of animals that can live in an area. And then if you want, particularly with wolves that have a very strong social hierarchy, if you want to have the opportunity to breed, you're going to have to move. And so young subadult males will often move very long distances. So I don't doubt at all, just as mountain lions, we've had a number of subadult younger male mountain lions pass through Iowa. It doesn't at all, it won't surprise me to have more wolves being sighted.
Our habitat in Iowa is not particularly conducive to wolves or mountain lions living here long term. Do you think that we'll mostly see pass-throughs, or do you think that there are places where populations could actually establish themselves?
It seems pretty doubtful to me that we have enough habitat for populations to establish themselves, at least for things like mountain lions and wolves. We have had a number of black bears that have found their way into northeastern Iowa, and my own feeling is that we probably do have adequate habitat for black bears, but I generally think that when it comes to things like mountain lions and wolves, we simply don't have enough available quality habitat for those animals. And so mostly what we're going to see are these subadult males who are passing through looking for good habitat.
Now, it seems that on the part of the public and even the part of the Department of Natural Resources in certain situations, because there is a lot of fear of wolves and of cougars, that the first response is to eliminate the animal in Iowa. Is there any kind of a management plan or program for those large predators?
Well, there are some animals that really don't have any kind of conservation status in Iowa, and that includes mountain lions and black bears. They don't have status here. And what that means is that, the animal walks into Iowa and it's fair game. There are no laws protecting it. And so the fact that you don't have any laws protecting it, and remember how rare this incidence is in Iowa, it's very exciting. Think of rhino horn and how rare rhinos are, right? And if you have the opportunity to collect that really, really rare resource, there's a lot of specialness in that to people. But there's also the unfamiliarity, right? What do people hear about mountain lions or black bears? When do they make the news? They make the news when there is an attack on a person. And so even though it's very, very rare that this occurs, this is what people have been exposed to. They haven't been exposed to any sort of balanced coverage of mountain lions. And so they don't know that, yes, you can coexist with this animal without it being a big problem. Same with coyotes, even. I mean, we pass coyotes all the time in our day-to-day lives, and we don't have a clue that they're even there. So you could be having the encounter, but if you don't understand that you're having the encounter, it's a foreign, alien experience to you, and all you know is about the scariness, the potential for an attack.
Now, when you get phone calls about coyotes I'm sure people just call you with questions, but when you have people call you who feel that the coyote is a threat or has created a problem, what kinds of issues do you hear about?
Well, generally, I hear about people who have a coyote that is hanging around their house and is not moving off when they open their back door, but it instead is just standing its ground. And so I advise people to use a system that they are using out west in Colorado with a lot of success. And it basically is a person, standing their ground. Don't run. That's the worst thing you can do around any predator is run. But standing their ground, making themselves look bigger, yelling, waving their arms, not throwing things at the animal. Generally, we're not really good in terms of throwing stones and that at the animal. And if the animal is off a ways, there's no reason you have to do that. But basically, making that animal feel very uncomfortable, not cowering, not losing eye contact with it, basically letting it know this is my space and you are not welcome here, to get the animal to back off.
Now, John Shivig mentioned when talking about coyotes that live in suburban areas or urban areas that a lot of the conflicts arise because people put pet food outside or they have their cats or small dogs outside and those animals actually get predated. Do you talk with people about the decisions they may be making that put them at a higher risk for coming into conflict?
That's most of what I talk to folks about and trying to convince them to do the thing that is going to keep their companion animals safe and keep wildlife safe as well as themselves. So just common sense things like not having a doggy door for your small dogs when you're living in a suburban area or an area that is frequented by raccoons. I always bring up the fact that I was once staying at a friend's house and I woke up at 2 o'clock in the morning because I heard a ruckus in the kitchen and here was a raccoon going after the cat food and the cat snarling at the raccoon. And, it really wasn't a very pleasant interaction. So, if we didn't have that door for the cat to go in and out of the house, my friend never would have had this incident arise.
Right. So, it's almost like baiting a trap because you have the food inside the door. It's very much like a live trap, right?
Exactly. And if you in Chicago where they have the Forest Preserve District, they had a lot of problems with coyotes and people's dogs. And it simply is a matter of, we talk a lot about at least when I was hearing John talking about, you know, knowing the biology of the animals and their behavior. Well, I work on the opposite end of it, which is knowing people and their behavior and just trying to get them to do things like, you know, don't let your small dog out alone after dark, particularly if you have coyotes in the neighborhood, because that's basically, you know, tempting them for a food or a fight, which is going to end up that your small dog is not going to win. Putting out dog food and leaving it out there when there are coyotes in the neighborhood sets your dog and or the food up for being consumed by the coyote, and then them thinking, you know, catching on that, hey, I can go here every night and there's, you know, food out here. So, you know, just realizing the basic needs of all wildlife, things like food and water and shelter and space. And if you can eliminate ready access to wildlife from those resources, you can better keep yourself, your companion animals, your property at safe from any kind of damage from wildlife.
Right. And food outside, of course, doesn't just attract coyotes, but raccoons and skunks and possums and all kinds of other creatures.
Right, all sorts of things. Yeah, and I heard, you know, John talking about the bird feeders and black bears. Well, you know, the same thing happens with bird feeders and rodents. You know, I get all the calls about squirrels and ground squirrels and all that. And, you know, again, it's thinking about, okay, it's not as if you put out bird feed and therefore birds are the only ones getting the invitation to come in and feed on the seed. All of the other seed eaters in the area, particularly because the birds will be kind of messy, they'll spill seed, you spill seed when you're filling your feeders and that, it then is readily available for these other animals to come in and eat. And guess what? We've got lots and lots of animals that eat rodents. So if you're going to have now this increased rodent population that is frequenting your backyard, you are then going to be attracting in things like foxes, things like coyotes, things like hawks, etc., that are feeding on these animals.
I want to go to the phones now. Tom is on the line in Shoeyville. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I was just listening to your expert there, and I think she really has hit it on the head. So I live in a wooded area, and we have a pretty decent balance here. Unfortunately, we have people here who like to let their cats out, and they complain when their cats disappear. Well, those cats are eating turkeys, turkey eggs, you know, the occasional songbird. And when those cats become the food of so-called predators, then people get upset. I think we need to appreciate the fact that these animals were built to interact in that way, and we need to understand that. Just like your experts have been saying, you know the consequences. I love to see fox. I love to see coyotes. We don't have any rabbits outside because there are coyotes. Maybe that's unfortunate, but every once in a while, the rabbits pop up for a while and because the coyotes go away.
Tom, I want to give Rebecca, we're almost out of time, so I want to give Rebecca a moment to respond. And I don't want to play the blame game here, and I know it's heartbreaking to lose a pet, but it is interesting, as Tom said, you know, if you lose a cat to predation from a coyote, a lot of people, their response is to say we need to get rid of all the coyotes. However, if you lose a cat to getting hit on the road, the response is not we need to get rid of all the cars.
Well, and it just brings back the point that management is all about values. And so people value their pet cat in a different way than they value foxes. The argument can be made that that same pet cat that goes outdoors, you know, when we look at the annual number of neotropical migrant songbirds that are killed by people's cats, and that, you know, it would appall you if you had a value that these neotropical migrant songbirds, you know, we want to hear these warblers and see these warblers in Iowa every year. So, you know, that's part of the point that I think John was getting at and that I get at is that, you know, you have to understand, yes, the consequences, but also the fact that, you know, we manage wildlife as a public trust resource. Everybody owns wildlife. Therefore, everybody has a say in how we manage wildlife, and that management is not just based on biological realities, but is also based on social realities. And so it really is important that we discuss this more openly with folks and help folks to take the actions that they need to take to keep themselves safe, to keep wildlife safe, and to keep their livestock and or companion animals safe.
And Rebecca, we're nearly out of time. We've been talking a lot about coyotes, and this bobcat population is increasing a lot. It's very difficult to see a bobcat, but are you getting calls from people about them?
I really haven't been receiving calls about bobcats, but I have to tell you that the bulk of the bobcats that are being sighted, even like if you look at the bow hunter survey results and that where they observe them, it's mostly in the far western part of the state or far southern Iowa. And I really haven't had people calling saying that they've been seeing them or that they are having problems with them. But as that population increases, harvest has been increasing, and we'll see if it gets to the point where there are more interactions that people are having that they find detrimental. Again, part of it is, you know, people are beginning to have backyard chickens and that. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if I started getting more calls about how to keep their backyard chickens safe.
Well, I'm sure we'll check in with you again in the near future. Rebecca, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been a delight.
Rebecca Christoffel is Iowa State University Extension Wildlife Specialist. And, of course, she answers questions from all over the state of Iowa, questions that people have about the wildlife that they encounter. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. We had technical support today from Jason Burns. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebby. Tomorrow on the show, the summer slide. Are your kids going to forget everything they learned this year or just part of what they learned this year? We'll talk about ways to prevent that and how real that phenomenon is. Talk of Iowa is a production of IPR News.